Episode 9, we're back. And who are we back with? So we have got Ben Stansfield here from Cornish Cheese Co. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And I'm just going to hand over to you because I love to start with, tell me about who you are, where you come from, and a little bit about Cornish Cheese.
I'll try and give you the brief version.
Go for it.
My name's Ben. Our family own and run the Cornish Cheese Company.
Best cheese ever.
We're very biased, but we think so. Well, we're coming up to 25 years next year. So started 2001 by my parents. And historically, dad was a dairy farmer, sold his milk. And
which most people will have seen your dad at a show somewhere, I would imagine, if they know the Cornish Cheese Co, right?
Yes, most likely. He loves to get out and about and try and tell his story. So if there's an agricultural show in the country, we've probably done it at some point.
Yeah, so, definitely been there to lots of them.
We like to hit all four corners. Basically, through the milk price crash, he diversified, had no idea about making cheese, and 2001 decided to convert his old milk bottling room at the end of the parlour into a cheese making room.
Why did I never know this story?
Yeah, so it there's a lot of depth to it, but that's the basics of it. And we started making four cheeses.
Okay.
With one little fridge, one of them being blue. Kind of a lot of people know blue mold kind of becomes airborne, and decided to start making our Brie and Camembert blues. So we ended up kind of staying with one product, making Cornish blue. And we did that for the best part of, 20 years, really. And it was very, very small for the first 10 years. Very small team, very small kind of cheese-making operation. And in 2010, Cornish blue, out of nowhere, to be honest, won the world's best cheese. I know, so it's an amazing...
Exciting.
Yeah. And it changed our lives. It changed the business. It made it kind of... had demand from all corners of the world we'd never experienced.
Yeah.
And it made it a bit more of a commercial kind of company and operation.
And it comes in that little lovely blue pot as well, that Cornish blue, doesn't it? Which is very popular at Christmas time.
Definitely. So it's for people that want that kind of gift of blue cheese, everyone loves blue cheese at Christmas. It's a bit of a different way of kind of presenting.
On the table, it looks great.
And you can warm it up, you can scoop it, and you get a lovely pot at the end of it. So they're really, really popular presents, gifts, all that kind of stuff. And then kicking on from that, we grew the business all organically, all kind of we still own all of it. And then kind of fast forward to the old 2020, which everyone's very, very aware about, COVID hit.
Yeah.
So at this time, I've got two siblings. I think all three of us are actually away. And like most families probably kind of came back to home. We didn't realise the extent of the problem we had, but we had a huge issue of all this cheese that had been made and about 75% of our sales had gone overnight. So it was, so we had a kind of a mini team meeting around the family table and what can we do? And the obvious answer, which we'd never tapped into before, I know you kind of mentioned our shows and events of that kind of direct consumer, but we'd never really done anything online. The website was very much an information page. It kind of just told you who we were and what we made. So we decided to kind of invest a lot more time into kind of creating a website people could buy from us. We stuck it out on socials. We said, look, we've got this cheese. It's cost price. We don't want it to go in the bin. And it went crazy. We went from 0 to 1,000 pretty quickly. Learned a lot of lessons very, very quickly. But we shifted the cheese. And I guess from there, we developed this whole new channel that we never had. So it was a positive. Well, it was a positive from a negative, effectively.
And do you feel as though the audience that you were selling to and that were buying your cheese before was different to that audience that then came into that online world? Because I'm always really interested to see, is that sort of persona and demographic of audience the same or is it very different?
If I'm totally honest, at the start, it probably wasn't. I think a lot of our audience pre-COVID, at the start of COVID, were probably more of the older generation that could afford to eat more speciality cheeses, et cetera. But actually, a huge shift, what I saw at the end of COVID, was when everyone actually had a little bit more time to think about and educate themselves on, well, what products am I buying? Where's it from?
Yeah.
What's it got in it? I think it's the huge thing at the moment of that ingredient list.
Yeah. Where's it sourced?
Exactly. And how was it made? And so the kind of obviously ultra process being thrown around a lot at the moment, and the fact it's kind of a good high quality product made from basically milk and bacteria and salt is people became the younger generation, became a lot more interested in those kind of specialty products, I'd say.
Yeah. And I think if we, so let's go backwards a little bit. So we have worked with you guys for, I think, going up to 18 months now, isn't it? Maybe a little bit longer. And I think what we notice as, you know, we help you with your social media, and we know that your audience absolutely love that behind the scenes of how is this product made, what happens in the dairy. And that is some of the best performing content that that your audience love to see. And I think that goes back into that awareness of where is it coming from and how's it made.
It's definitely, I think for too long, I think we just haven't been shown, I think, especially growing up.
Yeah.
If you went to a lot of schools and asked them how certain things, how's cheese made, how are sausages made, and kids need to know this, don't they? And more and more people are wanting to see it and becoming aware of it because of probably bad practice around, not necessarily the UK. I think the UK is very good in terms of food.
We're definitely better, aren't we, as well?
But there are certain areas in the world that probably aren't up to certain standards. So it's people are becoming a lot more savvy of what they... The standards they expect from their food and where it's from. Food miles is a big one.
Yeah.
So we saw that in COVID. Provenance of it's British made or even Southwest made, and it's all done on the farm. It's not kind of pulling ingredients from all different corners of the world and all that kind of pollution that comes with that. So is
now a good time, because we are sitting in a studio and all we can smell is cheese. Is now a good time?
You say it like it's a bad thing.
It's a good thing to talk about your wonderful range of cheeses, because we've touched on Cornish Blue. Obviously, we don't have the blue pot, but do you want to just talk us through your range a little bit more?
Yeah.
Which ones are the most favourite? Which ones, maybe you've got some new ones coming soon.
Yeah.
This is the time to talk about actually what is the product, because we know it really well. We love it. We help you market it. So I think we should know it pretty well. But for everybody listening, what is in front of us?
So to give you some context, obviously we made basically one cheese for best part of 16 years. So just before COVID, we made a goat variation of Cornish Blue called Cornish Nanny.
Yeah.
Obviously the nanny goat. Very inventive of us. and then during COVID, when we kind of looked at coming out of COVID of how do we future-proof the business more, we kind of looked down and said, well, actually, we really only had one product in one sales channel. So I think the ambition was to bring back the original four that my dad first made in that first year.
And which were they?
So there was a Cornish Brie, a Cornish Camembert, a Cornish Blue, and a cheese called Beast of Bodmin, which is a cider wash rind, which we haven't got to yet. So we're not on that full circle, but we're on the journey.
Yeah.
So effectively, call us mad or stupid, we decided to build our second dairy in the monks lockdown, really, and coming out of it.
Okay.
So we have a blue dairy and we have a white dairy on the farm. And so in the blue dairy, we still do our Cornish Blue and Cornish Nanny. And then in the white dairy, we've brought back the Cornish Brie. That was the first cheese we made in there that's been going for, probably almost 3 years now. Again, a goat variation of that because of how popular the Cornish Nanny was. So we've done a Nanny Gwyn, which Gwyn is white in Cornish.
Yeah.
So a white goat's cheese, effectively. And more recently, probably in the last 12 months, we brought back the Cornish Camembert, which has gone down really, really well. We've actually developed it even further and started changing the recipe, and we're bringing out an even kind of super powered version, I guess, later this year, which will be kind of the strongest and the smelliest cheese we do. But we're super excited about it. So we're hopefully going to launch that in September.
Is this hot off the press? Does anybody else know about this yet?
No, not really. Yeah, so I don't know when this is going out, but we know and you guys know, so that's pretty much it. But we have been entering it in awards, so we've entered it in a couple of the show. So on these agriculture shows we go to, there's always cheese awards, which is brilliant to see. So we've been entering in that just to get the feedback, because we, with a short cheese, you can kind of tinker with the recipe to try and get it how the judges, they're experts at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So their feedback's so valuable. And we've been working with cheesemongers and other cheese makers to really define how can we make the best soft cheese we can possibly make. And I guess before it's even come out, we won Supreme Champion in a speciality class at International Cheese and Dairy Awards in June. So
incredible.
It stands in good stead. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we think we're really proud of what we've done, and we can't wait to kind of, I guess, show it in some really a premium light and get it out there and get people trying it.
Yeah. So thinking about, you know, business, so we've gone through the amazing range of products that you've got, but I want to talk about you a little bit. So when we first started working with you, you were in the business full time,
mm-hmm.
and then you had a little transition,
yeah.
and then you come back into the business full time.
Yeah,
I would love to talk about that journey for you, and from your perspective, how has that journey shaped where you are now with Cornish Cheese? Because it's a journey that we see happens quite a lot in this industry. I think you have a food and drink product and it's normally a hobby or a passion, and you think, I'm not going to give it all my time in the world. Or maybe actually now what we're doing is pretty cool. We're going to give it so much attention.
It's
so
still scary.
it's really scary, and it's really relatable. And a lot of our listeners are probably in a very similar position.
Yeah.
So what did that journey entail? What did it look like?
I guess I'm in a bit of a different position that obviously I'm not first generation. I'm second generation. So there was already a setup there. Albeit when I came back in COVID, there wasn't any sales, so it was kind of starting from ground zero again and working up.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably important to say there was no expectation for me to come home so soon, but COVID just kind of completely threw that out the window. And when you kind of get stuck in, and my background is more on kind of where you do in the marketing and kind of the sales side, and we did a whole rebrand in COVID as well, and that was kind of my baby, and we worked really hard on that, and how do we develop a range that looks similar but gives kind of authenticity and fresh and artisanal kind of feelings when touching and seeing the product. So I was really involved in that, and then once we kind of got back to pre-COVID levels and the business was a bit more stable, personally I just felt I'd come back to Cornwall too soon, if I'm being totally honest. It is a pretty isolating place.
When you say too soon, where were you? Just so it gives that context.
So I was in university in Manchester.
Okay.
So very much kind of
busy city vibes.
Yeah, yeah. And I've lived in a few places, but that's where I was just before I came back. And I had a bit of a moment where I realised, to give some context, our family, like you would expect, our family house is on the farm about probably 100 metres from the dairy. So on a busy day or a busy week, you don't see many other people than your family who you work with and the amazing
don't
team.
Escape it.
Yeah, so I kind of got to a point where I realised you don't know what you don't know, and I need to go and learn more about... And I wanted to stay in cheese because it's an amazing industry and so many amazing people that are willing to give time and energy to kind of teach you all these things that you spend a lifetime trying to learn about. So thankfully, I managed to get a job with one of our distributors in London. So I got to go up in London and work with them, learning about... So I went from selling 3 or 4 products to they have 4,000. So,
wow.
Yeah. So a huge learning curve in terms of not just cheese, all different other products. And then it gave me the opportunity to, again, be in amongst a city life, which I probably learned isn't probably for me, but I needed to go and do it and explore that and meet the people. And I guess now London is a great place to go and visit and see who I need to see. But
and then appreciate going back to the farm.
Definitely, definitely. So yeah, so it was me and my sister at the time that kind of, so I do the sales and marketing, she does all the ops. So very much works with the team on site. And because I came back slightly earlier full time into the business, she's probably had the same thing, and now she's gone away for a year. It feels like we're kind of going in and out, but she tells me she's coming back next year. Yeah. So
it's like double dream team power then.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. So she's in Australia at the moment. So So it's telling her Cornwall's just as good is the next sales pitch, I guess. But So then when she decided she needed to go, I kind of felt like it was good timing to come back and I guess. Putting a little bit, I was still involved, as you guys know, kind of in my spare time. But it gives you so many more ideas and kind of it gets that wider perspective.
Yeah,
you think differently, don't you? I think when you're in the same environment all day, you kind of probably get fixated on a lot of the stuff you're doing.
Yeah.
When you're out in the open market, which is, I've learned again, a big lesson is just so important to whether it's a day a month or a day a week, getting out there and just seeing what's in the market and what people are doing and chatting to people
yeah.
and staying of the times effectively.
And seeing your customers as well. I think one thing your dad is so close to is his customers from all of the events that we see him at. It's that he knows exactly what his customers like. And I think it's that wider, like you say, when you get out and you speak to people about your products and what they're saying about them, that's so vital from an online perspective because then that rolls over into the digital space as well, doesn't it?
Instant feedback is the most valuable thing. You can.
Yeah.
You're not wasting time, energy, money on something that you think is good, but actually doesn't fit a size or a flavor profile.
Yeah.
And the two things, obviously we've done these shows and events pretty much since get-go. So we've had that, but that's the only real feedback we've had.
Yeah.
I think bringing it into the online space and having actual reviews, people have taken time to write to you, and good and bad. So actually, sometimes I'm probably guilty of looking at all the bad and the improvements, but
not the good.
When you share all the amazing reviews you do get to the it just makes a lot of the, because it's not the most straightforward product to make. There are ups and downs, and you're dealing with live bacteria and cultures. So the product's living effectively.
Yeah.
So sometimes it will go in one way and no one can really work out why. And it's frustrating.
Yeah.
What we want to do is create a consistent product.
Yeah.
So when the good feedback does come in, it definitely gives everyone a real big uplift and makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
So you just getting so better connected with
your audience.
Yeah, D2C stuff, definitely.
So it goes into what we're here to talk about today, which is going all in, okay? So I've called this going all in because we are on the cusp of quarter four.
Mm.
We love quarter four just as much as probably you love quarter four. And just before we went live, we were talking about holidays and how if they don't happen
that's
now,
a thing of the past.
We don't have holidays because quarter four is so vital for your business and making sure that everything, and when I say everything, all of those platforms are singing and working really, really well together. So quarter four last year, how was that for you? Obviously, we can talk about it from a digital perspective, but from a business perspective, why was quarter four last year one of your best quarters? And off the back of that, what does this quarter four look like for 2025? What question?
Yeah. Where do you start? Traditionally, most people know quarter four in cheese. It's where people are buying and eating more cheese than they have done all year.
And what did you say to me when we first met? You said, if you can sell cheese at Christmas, that's the easy job.
Yeah.
If you can sell cheese in...
January, February, Q1.
There you go. Yeah. I'll never forget you saying that to me either.
That's the real challenge of finding people that still want to eat cheese in January, February, which there are people. And actually, I think the more studies that are coming out and people are doing a lot of work nutritionally of...
Yeah.
Not processed cheese, but artisan cheese and specialty cheese of that live bacteria we talk about. It's so good for your diet, your gut health, and there's more data coming about gut health. So that's another selling point for later on. But I think Q4 last year was mega, wasn't it? In terms of the D2C channel, we learned a lot about, I think probably historically before working with you, we would very much be pretty ad hoc. So we'd run 2-3 maybe email campaigns with the shop's open or 15% off if you can get your order in by now. And probably the biggest learning for me would be actually starting that journey early and understanding the overall strategy within all your touch points. So not just your email, but your socials, make sure they link. And then when it comes to the paid ads, it's not even a question, because you've told your story and you've kind of hopefully told the customer why they should pick your cheese at Christmas and all the selling points it has. So that was a real eye opener in terms of, don't just go and send a couple of emails and expect to kind of grow the business off the back, because it's there's much more kind of longevity to putting a bigger and a plan and structure in place.
Yeah,
it's probably worth mentioning that we had to turn off the online shop on the 9th of December because we just physically couldn't pack anymore. So,
I mean, it's a great problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah.
And getting to that time in quarter four, it's a great problem, but it's also super frustrating from your perspective because, again, when I saw you at Bread and Jam and, you know, you were talking about that journey, you were saying this is how much we left on the table.
Yeah.
And yeah. that is really frustrating, isn't it? So going into 25, that's obviously a big learner.
Yeah.
How are we going to do this year? Are we, you know, ahead of the game on getting more out and not turning delivery date off? I know we've already had this conversation, but...
No, definitely. Operationally, we've set ourselves up to... We don't think... Obviously, there is a limit.
Yeah.
We're not Amazon, but we don't think we have to turn that shop off this year. We've put that much operationally investment and structure
so in the supply chain. So that puts the pressure on us then, yeah?
I guess so, yeah. Now we've got to make it and we've got to make good cheese. That's the first job. And then the second job is we've got to sell it. We've got to get the message out there that we will still have some. I think it is important. I guess we do a lot of work on the website of letting people order in advance.
Yeah, so which really helps.
Yeah, and it's getting that message out. Please, if you are looking to order it, just kind of get ahead of the game. It gives us a good heads of our stock, but also your order's secured. You can pick your delivery day. It can come to you. Oh, you're going to quote me now. Probably in the 22nd of December or something.
Yeah.
And you can nominate your day and we'll send it out the day before straight from the dairy. So
there's always an annoying customer like me, though. I think I did like 12 blue jars on the 20th or something of November and thinking I should have ordered way before that and I should have got my order in, but I just didn't get round to it.
And effectively, that's what we saw. So with having nominated delivery days and so many orders you can fulfill in a day, we almost saw it meet in the middle at the 9th. So we saw the orders coming in, the days falling off at the end, and then it got to a point where it met in the middle and we ran out of days effectively.
Yeah.
Where what we're trying to do is get them booked in, but also give the confidence to the customers that we hope, touch wood, we can keep going and fulfilling till at least kind of, that week before taking orders. Because everyone's a last minute shopper.
Everyone is a last minute shopper. It's always that, oh, I forgot the auntie or, oh, I've forgotten my uncle or whatever it might be.
And we'll be there.
You'll be there. So Christmas 25 is looking really exciting. I am personally so excited. And we are working with you again in quarter four and we're looking at emails and we're helping you on that performance marketing front. I think what's really interesting to note is, and I love geeking out on data, and I love the data, and my team love the data, but what's really, really interesting is when you look at that buying behavior behind your consumers. So what I mean by that is, if we're acquiring new customers and they're coming in at that sort of top of funnel phase and they've seen Cornish cheese, and they're like, oh, I love the blue jar. I'm going to go in and see a little bit more about them. What we see works really well for Cornish cheese is your email marketing is then sort of mopping them up and getting them into that conversion point, which is why your, and I again talk about it all the time, which is why your automation is really, really important.
Yeah.
And it's something we spoke about at Bread and Jam around, we've had 12 months where your foundations in terms of your automations have been laid. So we've got all of that data that we can really drill into. And we've spent a lot of time over the last sort of 2 weeks drilling into that data. And it gets me really excited because it's where the gold then happens.
Yeah.
How can we maximize going into this quarter what we've laid 12 months ago?
Definitely. And I think on that, we're probably now looking at our VIPs and stuff that we probably haven't given enough time and energy to as well.
Yeah.
So it's the people that...
And what do you mean by a VIP? Just so
our top performing customers of people that are coming back regularly, maybe not just the one order at Christmas. They're sending out... Because we are selling cheese, but we're doing gifts and presentations in a way that you can order it from us and send directly to Auntie Jo.
With a gift message?
Yeah. In 3 weeks on Thursday, if that makes sense. So it's those people that love the product, invested in product and are using us throughout the year. I think we need to probably, it's on us to pay them more attention and kind of have a bit more relationship with them of that feedback slash kind of what do they want from us? How can we help them? Because ultimately they're engaging with us. So we need to reciprocate
that. And make them feel human. I think again, and I go back to COVID times because I think it's where we kind of lost that disjointed sort of message between audiences where in the digital space, you don't lose your audience, but as things grow and as things scale, you get further away from who your core customers are. And I think now what we're seeing in the market is we're going back to being really close to them and do you pick up the phone to somebody who's ordered 7 times? Do you pick up the phone to someone who's spent over a certain amount? And I think people are, as a consumer, loving that more and responding to it more because there's just so much noise in the space at the moment.
I agree. And I think from a personal point of view, I know it's probably not possible for all brands, but we see it as that trying to collaborate everything we do. So a lot of the in-person events is connecting with them and introducing them to other sales channels. So it's we can get that face-to-face and we can talk them through the cheeses there and then that we may not be able to do through an email, for instance, which we're obviously working very hard and different approaches and whether it's video, whether it's recipes and getting them engaged within that. But I think it's probably, it's important from definitely from our point of view is to look at every single channel.
Yeah.
And every customer is different as well. So you have to look at some people don't want to be talked to all the time. Some people want to know what you're doing every kind of day on the farm. They want those updates.
Haven't heard from you. Where are you?
Yeah. So it's, and again, the data can drive that. And it's understanding where the open rates or who's clicking and what they're clicking on, what do they want to see. And actually, when we then get in front of them face to face, it's having conversations. It's not just saying, right, this is for sale, buy it. It's trying to take some time to have a quick
understand
chat.
As well.
And it's not a sit down kind of half an hour consultation with a customer that it's just a quick chat of, oh, you bought online, how did you find it?
Yeah.
Kind of what can we do better?
What is your bestseller?
Well, effectively our Cornish Blue, because we've been making it for so long. But so we've been making Cornish Blue for 24 years. But our Cornish Brie that we've been making for 3 years, I think will equal it this year. So it's quick. It's,
predictions.
Yeah.
Loving it.
It's gaining popularity very, very quickly. It's just a bit different compared to your standard Brie you get in a supermarket. It's because it's got that handmade element and we're putting more culture in it. So effectively more bacteria to give it more flavour. You get a bit more character from it, what we would call. But you get that cream. All our cheeses should be very creamy, buttery focused. And then the different styles and approaches we have on different ages will give you different kind of, I guess, longer taste notes within when eating it.
Yeah. So brand growth versus brand values. Now, conversation I have a lot because if we look at the last 12 months, you've seen growth online, you've gone to more events, whatever it might be. How do you balance that growth with staying true to your brand values? And that's really, really difficult and a challenge because you're a family-based business, you're a family-run business, you're based in Cornwall, your brand is so important and we nurture it as much as we can because we know how important it is. But just talk a little bit about growth versus values because it's one I have a conversation about a lot.
I think effectively anyone who runs a business wants to see it kind of become as big as it can. I think from our point of view, with producing the product and how kind of labor intensive it is at the moment, it's a positive and a negative. So the negative is we're limited. We can only make so much until we have to invest again.
Yeah.
And because we are doing it ourselves, it's a longer investment plan, basically. Yeah. We can't get overnight success. But I almost see that flip a positive, that we can't go from making X amount of cheese and 10xing it next year because we see a lot of issues in the, especially our industry, and people try and do that. Cheese isn't easy to scale like other products because they're living products. And if you try and just multiply what you're doing by 10, you will have quality issues or all sorts of kind of things you can run into. So I think going back to your question, it's doing it naturally, doing it the natural growth way, not trying to kind of grow too quickly and knowing where we are. And don't get me wrong, we have ambitions and longer term plans, but it's fulfilling your output as much as you can. And there is a ceiling at this moment in time. So it's constantly challenging that ceiling and then having to reinvest and keep growing it that way. I think probably keeps us pretty honest of where we are and what we can do.
And as a brand, this is a really in-depth question. As a brand, which values are really important to you and, say, for example, your mum and dad? Like, as a business, what is the core of your brand values?
I think the core is ultimately where it started. So starting in that little bottling room with my dad making cheese in a what we call a vat, no bigger than what kind of the area we're stood in, and literally mixing it with a plastic washing up bowl. That's how we start. Yeah. And I think when we sit down and talk about ambition and growth, there are definitely big goals there, but we want to do it in a way that we don't lose touch of that first year of, yeah. of that handmade element.
Yeah.
So, which does limit us because we can't necessarily go after certain contracts that have to be a certain price because we warrant a certain price just because of the labour involved. So I think we want to, the most important thing is to make high quality cheese.
Yeah.
So we need to make flavoursome cheese, full of character with consistency. That's the most important thing we do.
Yeah.
Undercoming that is keeping it true to our roots is the handmade element of, don't get me wrong, as you grow, you have to put in automation. So probably more so on our packing equipment. We are automating it more. We're using more machines to just help the guys out because ultimately when sales go up, you don't want them to kind of be working 23 hours a day, do you?
Yeah.
So it's more to ease the load. So automation has come in, but what we try and stay as close to as possible, which we do at the moment, is the key elements of the cheesemaking process are human fact. They are, when you're making, there is someone there testing what we call the pH, the acidity of the milk or the cheese, and they are making decisions on their knowledge. It's not a computer releasing valves or kind
it's a human being.
Yeah, and then they're the decision makers at different places throughout the process.
Yeah.
Another example, when we're salting our Cornish blue, it's just, and we put a lot of videos out about this, but we're hand salting it and it's all touch, feel.
Yeah.
And there's no kind of X grams. We know roughly, but it's all to do with the cheesemakers and
the taste and
And that's what we'd love to carry on, I think, is we can see where we can grow and we want to grow, but ultimately we're not going to kind of hit a point where we go, right, let's get the robots in and get it doing that, because that's not what we're about, really.
Yeah. So what is your biggest focus now that you're back into the business full time? I mean, again, that is such a question. What is your biggest focus, not just for quarter four, but for Cornish cheese as a whole? What is your biggest focus?
So I'm doing a lot of work at the moment for the last 24 years, it's all kind of been in one sales pool. So probably the biggest focus is to segment it and see what channel's doing what. So that's a lot of my time is so we have our direct to consumer, which is the online and the shows.
Yep.
We also have sales channels that go into major retailers and supermarkets.
Where can we buy Cornish cheese from? Now's the time.
Yeah, at the moment, we're in Waitrose nationally. And then on a regional basis, and Ocado nationally. Regional, we are in Tesco, we are in Co-op, and we just launched into Morrison's this week.
So excited. Every time I go into the supermarket, I still get that oh, Cornish cheese.
I recognise that. So, and it's lovely to see. And like you go in and chat to the guys there and they're so passionate about what they're doing. It definitely kind of lifts you up and motivates you more. So that's one sales channel. And then the others, looking at export. So we don't do any export at the moment. So
which is a whole channel in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, and an expertise that I wouldn't necessarily be able to do, but working with the right people in the right places in the world to try and open some opportunities and doors.
Sounds like you're going to be busy. Really busy now you're back full time.
Well, and we also have the speciality channel of dealing with kind of the high-end restaurants, hotels, cheesemongers, all these kind of stuff. That's actually a huge focus for us, I guess, going to Q4.
Yeah.
We're really trying to work with these guys, probably off the back of this soft cheese project that we're launching, that we realised we can work with them a hell of a lot more, and we can get that relationship even stronger. It's all about feedback. There's no point in us making a cheese that they don't want to sell or have no need for it. So it's constantly asking questions of what are your customers asking for? What are the on-trend flavours, I guess, we look a lot into as well. So a focus is probably dialing into each segment a little bit more. And then, within each segment, we have the goals of, so the direct consumer, we probably want to grow that twice it is right now.
No pressure.
Yeah. So, it's a nice little target.
It's really exciting, isn't it? Because we see on our side of the fence what your consumers are saying. So that social feedback, when we do our social listening piece, we're getting emails back. So we're seeing, what they're saying. And we are so immersed into your brand. It is unreal. Like if I say to the team, have you seen what they've said on the Cornish cheese? We've had this great feedback and we share it amongst ourselves because it excites us to see.
It's a lovely feeling, isn't it?
It's a great feeling. Yeah. Like we are so a part of your brand and what you're building. Yeah. It's really, really exciting. And going into quarter four, we are geared up for it. We cannot wait for it. And I think it will be really interesting to see that balance between, like exactly like I said earlier, those foundations that we've laid now what that then gives us and where we sit going into this quarter four. I know we did plan last quarter four and we did have a strategy in place, but this strategy for quarter four 2025 feels like it's on heat, like it feels exciting.
A lot of blue pots and hopefully
lots of blue
a
pots.
Lot of this brand new cheese that people like, so there's no guarantee of where it's going yet. So if it's kind of buying off the website, you could be the first people to even try it, let alone see it. So it's exciting.
So I think that's time for us to wrap it up. But the things that I haven't said is, if our listeners haven't tried Cornish cheese, you seriously need to go and try it because you're missing out. If you haven't checked them out on TikTok, go and check them out. The dairy is on there. You can see the process, everything that they're doing, all the great work that they're doing, especially when they're at events as well. I know
a few videos of me in a field as well.
There you go, Ben talking about the micro ad plant, which we didn't quite touch on, did we? Do we want to touch on that?
I guess it's probably when you're talking about scaling up and sticking to your values, that's probably one I probably should have mentioned is a big part of what I'm trying to do and my focus as well as the sales is the sustainability side. Yeah. So we've just recently invested in a micro AD plant, which is a lot more kind of achievable in terms of cost for a business our size. And effectively, it's not putting crop into it. It's just putting cow manure and it's capturing the methane that would be emitted, powering the dairy, not completely, but it's giving us green electric and naturally heated hot water that we can use. So it's a massive step forward. I've done a big statement of net zero by 27, whether we hit that.
Goal that we should speak about.
Yeah, so I can't believe I forgot that, to be honest. It's definitely a big part of what we're trying to achieve. We want to be net zero. We want to be pushing those boundaries with new technology, with new innovation, with efficiency, everything like that. But sticking to that core value of we make high quality handmade cheese is the idea. A lot of my time is spent on looking at all the different things that we can use to try and create enough green energy to enable us to come off grid effectively.
I also think as well, when you're in a business, and I can only resonate to how it feels sometimes when I'm in my business, is I feel like you wear so many different hats. One day I go in, I'm in like HR. Next day I go in, I'm actually in marketing. Then one day I go in and I'm in, you know, innovation. And I think what you're talking about is that innovation piece, isn't it? Around how can you come up with new ideas? How can you be different in your thinking compared to everybody else? Because I think when you're growing and when you're scaling, it's really important that you are thinking outside of that box.
Definitely.
And I think that's probably where that piece comes in as well.
And I'm at a point in my life where, like, working with you and the girls, I think it's important to, we talk about behind the scenes of making the cheese, but we've talked a lot about actually what is like all the different hats. What does that look like to me?
So
it was my birthday last week. So the challenge for this year is to try and do more of that behind the scenes of what I'm doing. Am I in the van going to a show? Yeah. Am I actually making the cheese? Am I in the office?
And which do you enjoy? Which bits do you enjoy?
And not all the good stuff either. So all the lessons learned. Don't get me wrong, there's some great stuff along the way, but there's some real frustrating days. And I'm trying to probably get better at picturing that and conveying that and trying to help if anyone I can help, I guess. I think it's probably a lot more to come in Q4 and this next year. The focus of mine personally is to give that insight into how we run the business effectively, which might not be right, but it just seems to work at the moment.
And it's exciting watching the growth journey and watching everything that you guys are doing. We love it. So keep it up, keep pushing. It's really inspiring to watch. And every time you bring out a new product or something's changed, it's so exciting. So we can't wait for quarter four. Yeah. I'm sure you are about to go into a hole of, this is it, our busiest time of year.
Trying to get as much sleep as I can.
Sleeping ready for quarter four.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're going to have to wrap up. We have absolutely smashed
Blown
that.
By.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us. And I'm going to finish up with, if you haven't checked out Cornish Cheese, check them out. Go on their website, try their cheese. absolutely the best cheese we have tasted.
Sign up to the newsletter.
Sign up to the newsletter if you want to get some great email campaigns. Yeah, yeah. And until next time, thank you, Ben.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.